Chasing China.
Ni hao and welcome back everyone to Chasing China. I'm Zara, your host and guide through the mesmerizing journey of expat life in Beijing. Whether you're a seasoned expat, considering a move, or simply curious about life in China, this podcast is here to offer you a front row seat to see what it's truly like to live, work, and thrive in Beijing. But before we dive into today's episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on the exciting and valuable insights our guests have to offer. Now, without further ado, let's get started on another adventure of Chasing China. And today we have a very special episode as we are taking a different perspective on expat life. I'm so happy to welcome today's guest, Huanqing. She was born and raised in China, but lived several years in Europe. Now she's back in Beijing and will share with us her journey. In this episode, we will hear about her time in Europe, what it's like coming back to Beijing, and about the differences between these two worlds. So hi, Huanqing. I'm happy to welcome you here today.
Hi, Zara.
So without further ado, let's start this interview how I start all the interviews here. I will throw out a word or phrase related to China, and you have to share the first thing that comes to your mind. You got it?
Yes.
Okay, let's start. Favorite Chinese food?
Chili pepper.
Sport activities in Beijing?
Ping pong.
English in China?
Developing.
Good answer. Countryside versus cities in China?
Huge difference.
And the biggest difference between Europe and China?
Surface.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
I think everything looks quite different, you know, from outside, but deep inside is more or less the same.
That's nice. Okay, so let's go to the interview questions. First of all, can you tell us when, where, and why did you live in Europe?
I will try to just, you know, be brief as possible. So I spent like 5 years in France while I was doing my master's school. And then I also worked there a little bit. Afterwards, I moved to China and then back to Denmark and also Sweden, you know, for some working experience. So I will say in the past 10 years, I spent most of the time, I will say more than 7 years in Europe. And I came back last year. February, right after China, you know, opened up after the COVID restriction. Yeah.
And what was your motivation going back to China? Why did you come back?
Well, first, because it's just my country, I guess. And then, I mean, more obviously, actually, it is cheaper, you know, to be honest, to live in China. And also, it's so convenient. You know, it's like, sorry, as a Chinese, I'm developing all these kind of habits like delivery and also, you know, you can call for any kind of service like with really affordable price. I'm not saying I'm proud of it, but, you know, it's just make your life much easier. And really living in Copenhagen is really expensive, you know. So I was like, okay, now maybe it's time to first move back to China for a while. And then afterwards, let's see.
Well, I've never been in Copenhagen, so I just can't compare it to Germany, but it's definitely a big difference, the prices and the living costs. So, yeah, can you share some highlights and memorable experiences from your time living and working in Europe?
Sure. I mean, there are many. You know, you always do some crazy stuff that you probably don't feel comfortable doing at home, you know, because like when I was young, I was viewed as a very good, typical, nerdy, good student. But then after you moved to Europe, you know, the first time I was like 21 years old, when you're just, there's nobody, you know, next to you and you can do whatever you want. So just try, you know, everything. And I will not go into details. In terms of the highlights, I think it's more like each time it's very interesting experience to get into and try to adapt to new cultures, right? Because, you know, even within Europe, I think the culture, you know, it's like people, the way they think and also the lifestyle in France and in, you know, it's like in Denmark and Sweden are very different. Even between Denmark and Sweden, which people always perceive as Scandinavia and the people there hate this term, is very different from each other. So I would say it's like each time when you first move to a place, you need to take some time. The first is always very hard. And then you take some time, you know, trying to understand the people and trying to find your position there. Those processes are very interesting.
Yes, so that is very interesting. So I totally agree. You have to take your time moving and adapting to a new culture. But getting back to the highlights, did you have any highlights in your time living there?
I can think of a few times where I had in probably France. It was in France, actually. I think during a school case study or, you know, group presentation, right? We have like a group of people and we all have, you know, group discussion. And that's the first time in my life I remember to witness and also try to learn saying no, or I disagree with people, you know, right in the face. Because in China, you know, we were so used to say yes all the time, right? And especially when you have some different opinions, you tend to swallow it. Because saying no to people in face could be recognized as aggressiveness and also being unfriendly. But then I realized actually the first time, you know, in France, you know, you have to speak out because otherwise people will not take your view for, you know, serious. So I would say that was a big culture shock. I also highlight because this kind of opened my world. It was also probably first time in France because that's the first time I live outside of China, right? I learned that not everyone wants the same kind of life. The reason why I say this is because, you know, I was studying in, I would say, the best business school in France, and it's all the families who really want their, in Chinese perspective, right, it's normally the family who has the effort to really cultivate their kids and want them to just make some career, whatever, send their children to this kind of school. And I just took it for granted, well, people there must want to do jobs such as finance, law, consultant, this kind of fancy jobs, right, after graduate. Because this looks better, you know, that's what everyone wants here, at least. And then there was one time I was talking with a professor, and he told me he has a neighbor who is around his age, he was like 50 years old, and the neighbor also graduated from my school time ago, also from a very, you know, privileged family. But he decided to turn to as a clown, you know, working in the circuit afterwards, and they're doing something together. And then I asked him, okay, how do you know each other? He's like, oh, he's also from the school. And I was like, what does he do? He's like, oh, he's a clown. I was like, wow, that's super cool, you know? and that's the first time I was like, wow, you know, it's not like everyone wants the same stuff. And you cannot really judge people based on how socially successful, right? Based on this mainstream criteria. I know it's very hard because me, even now, I still judge myself a lot, right? But that's the first time, you know, opens my view, you know, understanding that there are so many different ways of living and thinking in the world. And actually that eased my anxiety and also helped soothe a lot of my problems, you know, I had in the past. So I don't know if it's count as highlights. I would say it's probably one of the biggest learnings I had in Europe.
Yes, and I think learning something important or something that helps you in life is a highlight. So it's very impressive and also funny what you told us. And in one of our last episodes, I talked to Stephanie and we also talked about this topic that especially in China, of course, parents want always the best for their kids. But I think what I observe is that here in China, often people think there's only one right way and you have to be successful and you have to do a great job and to earn money. And that is the right way of living. And as you said, there are so many different outcomes in life, so many ways to live your life. And to experience that is what I love about traveling, because it opens up your perspectives and it also makes you question your own life, right?
I think this is definitely one of the major differences I observed between China and also, you know, especially Europe. But back to the topic, you know, about what we said about China, right? So like, it is true that most Chinese family really hope their kids to go to good university, you know, to find a good job. And good is very easy to be defined, which is like high paid, like in a stable and also big name, you know, companies, right? Because in China, we have too many people and there are not enough high quality education resource. So in order to distribute the limited resource in the fairest way, the only way is to just go through a national college entrance examination. And that somehow made everyone want the same thing, which is to have a high score, you know, a score as high as possible. And back to, you know, what we see in other life stages, for instance, after you graduate, you go to office, still everyone wants to have same kind of job, which is highly paid, big names, look fancy, even though this is not what you really like to do, right? Still somehow it's also linked to the deep insecurity about Chinese people, because like not a long time ago, everyone's still struggling like with food and with the basic living, how to say, standards. For instance, my mom told me when she was young, when she was a kid, right, she probably had chance to eat meat twice per year because they just cannot afford it. So this kind of insecurity is still something deeply rooted in the Chinese people, you know,'s mind. And we always say, based on the theory, that like after you meet your basic needs, you can think about something else. So I think China somehow now is still gradually changing from that stage to something, you know, higher. Because you see like people, more and more younger generation, right? Nowadays, they start to think about the meaning of job, right? Start to just be a little bit rebellious, you know, say no to authorities. And also a lot of people try to do things that is not really mainstream. For instance, the entrepreneurs, you know, there are people doing all this kind of job that their parents will never consider to do. So I think China is still gradually moving there. So this is also my reflection, right? When I see like the difference between Europe and in China.
Yes, that's so interesting, because I think that is also one of the reasons why it's always very helpful to get to know a little bit more about the history of a country to understand where certain behaviors come from. So in a intercultural training, I also learned that just a few years ago, there wasn't enough food here. And also that topic compared with this competition here creates a lot of anxiety, as you mentioned it. Yeah, it's just very helpful to get to know a bit about the background story of the people and not to judge only by the observation of some behaviors, like also the rudeness. What I learned in this training was also that because of the crazy amount of people, Chinese people are really trying to be the first. Because there are just so many people here. And in order to get a spot in a good university, you have to be good and fast with everything. So in this training, we had a funny example. So in Europe, I don't know if you observed it, when you walk through a door and somebody else is behind you, you just hold it open, right? And especially the older generation of Chinese people don't do that. And for us Western people, that may seem rude. Like sometimes, I don't know if it's a known stereotype, but I heard it often that some people think that Chinese people are rude. But I don't think that they do it out of rudeness. I think they just don't think about it. They don't learn it. It's not in their mind. Like there's also this inner group versus outer group thinking in China. I think we will talk about this in a later episode more deeply. But like when you're not inner group, which means friends, they don't care about you. So when they don't keep the door open for you, it's not because they want to be rude. It's just because they don't think about it.
I think this fact that they don't think of you could also be recognized as somehow being rude, right? But I think what you said is very, you know, I would say fair. And also, I like the fact that you're observing, trying to, you know, from a deeper perspective, not just judging people easily from the surface, because it's always easy to judge. And for this, I think there are a lot of reasons, you know. I would say the main reason is probably because it's not trained or it's not something everyone's doing, right? And once there are more and more people start doing that, then it will also cause somehow like a similar impact. You will also let people around you start doing the thing you're doing, you know. So it's more like before, we don't have this kind of concern, right? Everyone just, you know, focus on his or her own business. I believe very soon in the future, it will also become really common in China to see like something similar, you know, as you mentioned. And you know, it just reminds me of another story I would like to share. You know, when I was working in Malmo, Sweden, I remember it was like one day I was taking the bus and I saw it was a Saturday, maybe early afternoon. I saw like on the street there was probably like a lady, which around 50, 60 years old. She was with a kid, which maximum 3 or 4 years old, right? They're walking on the street and the lady was teaching the kid to pick up the garbage and also, you know, the bottles, whatever, on the street, because it was Friday last night, it was everywhere's garbage, right? And it seems like just a casual Saturday entertainment. And at the time, I was thinking, wow, it will probably take China another 100 years or, you know, 200 years to reach that. But I believe we're going to finally, you know, reach there, because it's really just a matter of time. It's not like who is better, who is worse. No, we will be there just giving enough time. It's just in different developing social status, right? So what I want to say is, like, if you just compare different countries, you can really see, like, we went through actually similar phases, just, you know, in different times. Yeah, I mean, I believe in the end, every person will, like, you know, eventually become more or less, you know, similar to each other. And this is what I believe in.
And I like this perspective. I like that mindset. And I agree with you. I think the world is getting more international, and also China is opening its borders more and more, right? Now with the visa topic, a lot of people from Europe can enter the country with no visa if they don't stay longer than 15 days in China. I think China is developing, as you said, and I think in a good way. So every country can learn from each other, right? So that's why I also love to travel, because it opens your mind, it gives you other perspectives, and I think it's just amazing to learn from each other.
Just, you know, talk about, for instance, what you mentioned about my reflection about living in different places. I mean, like, I did reflect a lot. I tend to overthink even. So I would say that one of my observations, which is probably not a stereotype or not classic, is because people always ask me about, oh, how is French people? You know, it's like, normally you have a stereotype like French are slow. Sorry. I mean, it's like, I like French people, but, you know, in China, people tend to believe French are like slow and not to take things too seriously, you know. And also for German, for instance, German tend to be more rigid and also like punctual, which is true. And also very serious, even a little bit tedious sometimes, you know. You know, they have all this kind of stereotypes, right, about people. And also for Scandinavian, and they hate this term. So it's like, you know, it's always flat, no hierarchy, you know, it's like everyone's equal. And people always ask me, right, so you have been living in these countries for some time, you know, what do you think about it? Is it true or not? I would say, I mean, it is somehow partially true based on what you observe from surface, because it's true that in different culture, people do have some, you know, typical way of behaving, right? We call it cultural norm. But once you look a little bit deeper, right, you tend to find out that actually it is more or less the same in each country. It doesn't matter which company you're working for. Like, you can work for a Chinese company, you know, you can work for a Danish company, you know, Swedish company, French company. Everyone wants to get promoted. Everyone, you know, wants to just develop their career, right? And also in terms of individual, right? Everyone wants to be loved, wants to be respected, appreciated, needed. And this is just the ultimate needs of everyone. Doesn't matter which nationality you have. Yeah, I think, you know, having this idea in mind, when I talk to you or talk to someone from, you know, like another different country or from, you know, any local Chinese, you know, it's more or less, it's not that much different, because I talk to you as a person, not just, you know, someone represent like a German citizen, because we are much deeper than that.
Absolutely. Like, behavior are different from each other in most countries. And I think that's great. That gives us a reason to travel, that makes us curious about learning about other cultures. But at the end, everybody needs the same things. Everybody wants to be loved, you know, everybody wants to have attention, and just everybody wants to live a happy life. And that is what you see when you get deeper, as you mentioned. And it's so funny, because people are asking me, like, oh, wow, how is it to live in China after 8 months now? And I always say to them, I love it. Like, after 3 weeks, I felt like it's my home, because at the end, everybody just lives his life. And that's so funny and so beautiful in the same way, because here, of course, people behave in another way, but at the end, there are people on the street buying things, eating, like making poo, whatever. Everybody does the same things. So that's the nice thing. I think it's your job to feel at home and not the country's job. So I think you can feel at home in every part of the world. You just have to make your own routine, make friends, and find something which makes you happy. Yes. And then it doesn't matter what behaviors are around you or in what country you are. So, yeah.
I think you feel like home because actually this is your home, like you're with your husband. You know, you have the love you need and you have the family, like you live in Germany and you also live with husband, and here the same, right? So actually the small family is moving around. That's why wherever he goes, wherever like you're together, right, you feel like home. And that's actually also the reason why I decided to come back to China, because I was alone living, you know, in Copenhagen. And it was so tough, you know, especially during winter time. Summer, all fine, you know, it was like sunny, it was like so pleasant. I highly recommend you to go to Denmark or like Scandinavia in general, like during summertime. It's the most pleasant summer I've ever had in my life. It's like so, so nice. But once as it turns to winter, it just start to become so depressing. It's like it's rainy and gloomy all the time. And then it's like the sun, there's barely sunshine, you know, for a week. And everyone just, you know, stays home and they all have a family. And whenever I came back home, it was alone. Even I was living the downtown, the city center, right? Around 8 p.m., there was nobody on the street. And I still remember, you know, even though I was with my dog, I love my dog, but still, you know, I feel incredibly lonely at the time. And that's probably also the main reason why I come back to China. So in the end, it doesn't matter where you live. As long as you're with the people you love, the people you care, and the people who care about you and who love you, you will feel home.
You expressed that so beautifully, and I couldn't have put it better myself. But at the same time, it is very sad to hear that you felt that lonely. But I guess it's also nice to have your roots and have something to get back to, you know, that you have your family here in Beijing and it is worth to return. So I'm happy, especially for myself. I'm so happy that you came back here. But it's funny because now we're getting back to the original question, you know, about your highlights. So also what I wanted to know, like, what did you like and what did you not like? So you mentioned the winter in Copenhagen, right? So could you tell us your favorite things in each country and maybe also the things you didn't like?
Sure, this is a very good question. So probably I start first with France because that's the first country I've been to, you know. I was in France. My favorite thing is like the people. Why say this? I know like a lot of people hate French, you know, and they say French is so arrogant. They don't speak English. I know they have not probably the best reputation in the world, right? Even among European. And it is true that, you know, when you don't speak French, it is quite difficult to live there, especially, you know, after 1 year in school, in campus, I moved to Paris, you know, for the gap year. But afterwards, you know, once you get to know the people and also you try to integrate yourself a little more, you need to make an effort, right? And you can find people just change totally different. They become so nice. They feel so proud, so happy, you know, seeing some foreigners trying to just understand their culture. I think it's really a culture proud thing, right? They feel so proud about themselves, like the culture. So once you make a little bit effort into it, they're gonna just embrace you and welcome you like no one else. So I say like French people are quite interesting. I like them, you know. They're also very direct and straightforward. And also in a funny way. So yeah, I would say this is my favorite thing about French or France.
Well, I just have been once in Paris for a few days. So after what you told me, I really want to go back actually. Because yeah, I want to experience that. And I think just what came into my mind when you talked was that it seems quite similar to China because also Chinese people, like they, I think I mentioned that quite a few times now in this podcast, that like the normal Chinese person does not speak English. But what people told me is that they understand English more than we think they do, but they hesitate to speak it. And also that I think it's pretty hard to make like a deep friendship to a Chinese person. I think it's also a bit similar to the stereotype of Germans, right? That we are close and that we have a hard shell. I think the same for Chinese people, but in a different way. But if you get to know a Chinese person like real, and if you are in a group with him, then they are so friendly. They embrace you. They let you in their family, in their tradition. And I think that sounded very familiar to what you told me about your experiences in France.
Totally. I'm happy you just, you know, mentioned this, right? And a funny thing is to compare, you know, this phenomenon as you mentioned, like, you know, as an expat living in China, right? If you don't speak the language and you don't meet someone who speaks English, right? It could be difficult for you to make friends or connect with local people, which makes 100% sense because, of course, if you cannot communicate, how can you get to know each other and be friends? And once the language barrier got removed, you find it actually quite easy to get to know people. At least people tend to behave quite warmly and also welcoming, right? But this is actually not the case what I learned or I experienced in Denmark. Because, you know, as we probably all know that first I have to say, like, I like Danish people. It's not something negative, it's just a different way of living, right? Also, like, you know, their way of living is due to the specific community, how they structure or, you know, formed the small community in Denmark, all comes from something deeper. But on the surface, right, just to compare this, like for expats to make friends with local people, right? Even though every Danish citizen speaks perfectly English, a lot of the expats there find it incredibly difficult and lonely to live in Denmark. And that's why I was hanging out a lot, you know, with girls from all different countries, from Portugal, from UK, from America. Like all these girls, we came together just because we've been living there. Some of them even have been living there for a long time, 4, 5, 6 years. But they still struggle with making friends with local people. One reason is because Denmark is quite small, you know, as we all know, they don't have a lot of people. I think the overall population is probably 6 million or something. Like Beijing, you know, is 20 million. So you probably, yes, more than that. So as a result, right, it's like if you live in Denmark, if you're Danish, right, you probably know the neighbors or, you know, you have a friend that you know you knew since you were 2, 3 years old. And the family knew each other for decades. So everyone first knows each other. So the likelihood you know someone, someone knows you is very high. And that's also actually one of the reasons why people behave in a very appropriate way, you know, because they're afraid, like, you know, the social pressure is high. And second is because they have very close family friends or childhood friends. They just stick close with each other. They live in the same place or same city or same neighborhood for so many years. And that's why, you know, their life is kind of established or like their motivation to change or their willingness to open to something new is much lower than, for instance, somewhere like China.
And here we come back to the topic that judging someone is very easy, right? Just from the observation. So first you could think, okay, like life in Denmark is lonely and it's hard to make friends. But if you get deeper and you understand why that is the case, it makes it so much easier to live there and to adapt and also accept the people how they are. So very interesting to get these insights. So thank you for that. But let's continue with the things you like and you don't like about these countries.
Oh, sure. Just to be fair, right? So something I don't like about France is probably also the people, I would say, you know, because as I said, they can be so painful, you know, when you don't speak the language or you just first came there, you know, each coin has two sides. So just to be fair, French are just human beings. They have their good side. They have their bad side. They're just different. And just back to Denmark, I think... Well, the winter time is definitely hard for people to swallow or to, you know, to live with. And just on the contrary, like summertime is probably my favorite thing in Denmark, but also just to be a little bit diverse. I think what I really enjoy living in Denmark, right, is how, because we said it's quite difficult to build some, you know, connection with local people, right? But at the same time, it is also so pleasant to go out and talk to people, especially during summertime when everyone's in a good mood. It is really nice to talk to people on the street. Like when I was having a dog, I always walk my dog, you know. Whenever we met someone, another dog owner, I can talk with the person for hours, literally. And I even make friends, you know, with one of my neighbor because she's walking her dog and I was walking mine. And in China, it's like, it's a little bit hot. I guess to do this, when I first came back, I was walking my dog and I saw a lady, she's also walking her dog. And I was just used to, right, like, oh, another person, so I can talk to her. So I was staring at her, right? And she saw I stare at her and she just make a turn and left right away. I was like, oh, okay. So this is now how people do things here. But it was one of the first few days I came back. But afterwards, I quickly adapt to the new norm, you know? But yes, I think in general, strangers are much, more friendly. And also they feel much more secure, you know, with each other in Denmark compared to Copenhagen, right? In Beijing, I can only just see the difference. But again, China is getting better because you see more and more people that tend to help you and just offer you help when you look lost, especially if you're not Chinese.
Absolutely. But first, let's go back about what you said about China so that China's changing. I have the same observation. So I think a new generation is coming with new values and different goals in life. And I think that can also be influenced by the social media. So yeah, I'm happy to tell you that my experiences so far has been very pleasant. So I was very surprised by the kindness. And yeah, of course, you do your own observations. And at the beginning, maybe you have a culture shock because you think, okay, they seem a little bit rude. But when you get deeper, you notice that it is not rudeness and that they can be very, very helpful and friendly people at the same time. So I think with Sasha in the first episode, we had this nice little example that we were at the airport and like ordered a Didi, but we didn't know where to go. So we approached a stranger, gave him our phone, and he understood. I don't know how, but he understood that we are looking for our Didi driver. And he just accompanied us through the whole terminal, I think 5 minutes, till we could find our Didi drivers. Like, I think your experiences show that if you speak the same language, it is much easier to make friends, especially local friends. But at the same time, it is so beautiful to see that some things are possible without speaking the same language. And that makes me very happy.
Totally, I agree with you. This is a very good example, right? And that reminds me of some of my personal experience in China and also in Europe. In terms of like families or friends, I think the personal boundary is blurry here, which means people do things and say things, you know, you can feel, oh, wait, this is a little bit too private, you know, you're being too close. But at the same time, it means people actually feel more comfortable to take more responsibility and also give you more help. So, you know, it's like probably in Germany, I assume that once you turn 18, like your parents will stop financially support you, right? Or even before that, you know, so you become individual, you live totally separate, and also you just earn your own money. But here in China, you know, it's just so common that parents, after they take care of their kids, they will still spend all their money, their effort taking care of their grandkids. And just take it for granted. Everyone's doing that. But at the same time, it means like they will also dig deeper in your personal life. For instance, they're gonna judge you like why you're not married, or why you married this person, that person, not that person, why you do this job, why don't you do that job, right? So it's like I'll say the involvement, the level of engagement is much deeper and higher than in Europe. It's just different form.
And that just reflects this topic of pressure, you know? So I think I also learned that family is much more important here, and also the expectations within family. But with that comes also the expectations and the pressure they also put on their kids. So it's very interesting to observe these differences. Let's go over to another topic. Having lived in both Europe and China, what are some of the key cultural differences to sum it up now? So I think we heard a lot of differences, but can you break it down to one key difference?
I think it's really hard. I cannot just summarize into one thing, specific thing, I guess. Can you?
Yeah, I think there are so many. But yeah, I don't know. So in this intercultural training that I already mentioned, we learned a lot about the relationship orientation here in China, that this maybe is very different. So I already mentioned this inner group, outer group. So what the definition of it is that if you are in a group with a Chinese person, then they care about you, they help you, they talk to you. And if you're outer group, like people on the street, they just don't care about you. Same with this door. They don't hold the door open for you because they don't care about you, but not in a bad way. They just don't care because you're not in a group with him. So what we learned, well, in work terms, is that when you are a manager and you want to have a good team, good employees, you have to try to be in a group with them. And what you need for that is guangxi. I don't know if you heard of that term. Yes. Well, it's a Chinese term. And translated into German, it is like vitamin B, which means like contact. So in Germany, you say to enter maybe a good company, to get a good job, you need vitamin B, which means good contacts, right? The trainer explained to us that in order to get in a group with the Chinese people, you need guangxi. And here that means getting trust, getting the people to trust, which means do not criticize an employee in front of everybody, because that means face loss. And face loss is a very difficult topic in China. So for me, this was a mind-blowing information. So what do you think about that?
First, it's very interesting what you said about vitamin B, right? This is very funny metaphor, I like it. And I think it summarized quite well, you know, what you said about guanxi or connection, how important it is in society, right? And you know, while you describe that, I suddenly have a picture in my mind where I, based on how people interact with each other, you know, also the trust level, right? I would separate each society into different circles. So the biggest circle outside applies to the broadest area, like a broadest range. This is the part when people don't care about each other, right? So we have barely any connection or links with each other. So that's when people just open the door and you're behind the person and the person just shut the door in front of your face. And after that, a smaller, circle, we just have the basic social courtesy, which means like you see someone behind you, you hold the door for the person, right? Or, you know, you just give person a hand when this person needs some help on the street, even though you don't know each other. And this, I would say, is actually the biggest or the broadest circle in Europe. So it's still very, you know, general courtesy. It's like, it's not like you guys are the best friend and you don't have the deep trust with each other, right? So you, but you treat other nicely, basic and nice. That's the difference. And then on top of that, there comes like the close friends circle, either your family or people you trust. So I was in China, there are probably three circles, whereas in Europe, there are only two. And this also applies to the workplace. I was working like in France, in Sweden, and also in Denmark, right, for a long time. I spent all my working time actually in European companies. And I would say if you, for instance, imagine even in Scandinavia, if you openly challenge your team leader, it will not look good. You have to always show respect, which is literally the same as how people do it here. And it is true that in the workplace, when you don't know your colleague here in China, you know, they probably could just ignore you. Whereas in Europe, you know, normally people would nod and also tend to be helpful to each other, right? But still, it's like there is a big separation in terms of, okay, if you are really in this group, right? It's like if we can trust each other, if we're in the same interest group. And it's also, what I observed is like, you know, in Europe, when you want to get a job, especially when you reach a certain level, connection is the key. It's like you will never get a job by posting, you know, it's always connection. So on the surface, it might be a bit different, but the deeper we look, the more similar the two society might be.
Absolutely. And I love the metaphor of the circles. I think that explains it very good. But let's talk a bit more about your experiences regarding the work culture and the work environment. So how did you adapt to the work culture in Europe compared to China? And were there significant differences you can tell us about?
First, I haven't really, you know, worked in a pure Chinese, you know, culture, because as I mentioned, all the companies I work for are European companies and most of them I spend the time in Europe, right? And normally I'm the only Chinese or even the only Asian, you know, working the team. But still, you know, back to what we said, I think the deeper, like the nature is more or less the same. You know, we all want to get promoted. We want to, you know, have bigger responsibility, also bigger payment. And also, you know, I'm still not that senior, so I cannot say like I know everything, right, about the workplace. Maybe one thing I can observe quite directly, if you work with European or with, you know, non-Chinese colleagues, you might need to sometimes stand up for your perspective or stand up for yourself, right? Because if you only say yes or only agree to people, this will not win you credibility. But also, you know, to a certain limit, because again, as we said, nobody wants to be opposed or like want to be attacked or like having argument or whatever, you know, in front of everyone, because we all want to look good.
Absolutely, I totally agree. At the end, we all want the same things out of life. And I guess also the basic office rules are almost everywhere the same. In what ways did your time in Europe influence your personal and professional growth? So you mentioned, which I think is beautiful, that living abroad helped you to shape your perspectives on the world, reduce your anxiety, helped you to stand up for yourself, say no. Is there something else maybe?
Well, it was part of me and shaped to who I am right now, I guess. It impacted me from every single way, you know, I live for my life. So, I'm still who I am, but I think when I now make decision, right, I try to more think of what I want and what I feel comfortable, right, and think less about what I should do. It's still hard to resist this tendency sometimes, you know, but I'll say yes, this is definitely something I learned by living in Europe.
Yes, and that is connected to what you told us earlier, right? That you just saw that there's not this one way of living. I think living in another country just enriches your life. Yeah, but let's now talk about China, your home country. So coming back to your home can sometimes bring a reverse culture shock. So did you have that, and was it difficult to return after such a long time? Or in general, how has the experience of coming back been for you?
I think previously I mentioned about the example of, you know, walking the dog, which is one example, you know, I had as a reverse culture shock. And also, you know, I don't know if this is because of the culture or because I'm aging. It's like after living abroad for a while, you know, now I find it a bit challenging, to be honest, to live with my parents. But I guess not only me, but, you know, most all the 30 years old people have the similar concern. So apart from that, nothing much really. You know, I'm Chinese, so I adapt to Chinese culture really quick.
And that's so amazing of our human brain and body that we are able to adapt and change or get back to habits pretty fast. But let's now talk a little bit more about the language. So language often plays a crucial role in expat experiences. How did language impact your time in Europe?
You're absolutely right. You know, language, I think, is like an important tool, you know, for someone to, you know, make his or her life comfortable, right? It doesn't matter where this person lives. And for me, I did suffer quite some time, you know, when I first moved to France, even when everyone from Sweden and also Denmark speaks perfectly English, right? But you can definitely feel the difference if you don't speak the local language, because that's still the primary language local people tend to use. I mean, it's like, just imagine there is an invisible wall between you and the local people, because language for me is not only communicating, you know, it's also part of the culture. So why I feel French people tend to be perceived so differently before after learning French is probably also because, well, learning the language, I also learned the culture. So I feel closer. So definitely, like, language plays a huge role.
Absolutely. So language and history are connected to each other. When you speak the language, of course, it makes it easier to get a deep dive into history and understand the topics better. And it also makes it easier to integrate and adapt yourself. So I think if you have the opportunity to learn a local language, do it. But some languages are easier than others. Let's move on to another very interesting topic. Are you sometimes thinking about going back to Europe?
I don't mind. I mean, it's like I had fun there. And for me, it's like what matters is whom I'm with, right? I wouldn't be that open to move back being alone, to be honest. But if there's right company and right chance, I would definitely consider, you know, it doesn't matter where you live. It's really about whom you're living with.
I totally agree. And maybe you will find your prince charming in Europe.
Princess charming, or just become one myself, you know, who knows?
You already are. Okay, so now maybe what all the listeners want to know. Where did you like it most? Living in France, Sweden, Denmark, or China?
Oh, so you mean compare those countries, you know, with China? Equally, it's like, can I say this? You know, literally, I cannot really compare because I have different up and down in each country. But if I had to make one choice, I would say China, because this is where I am now. You know, we always tend to make the best choice.
Reasonable choice. I think we all can understand that. Okay, so what advice would you finally give to individuals navigating the expat life, especially those who have experienced living in both Western and Eastern cultures?
Well, for, you know, expats living here, I guess it's just to don't be afraid of Chinese food. And for Chinese, you know, live in other countries, I would say just don't be afraid. You have to feel comfortable to defend and protect yourself. Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. So, yeah, well, thank you for joining us today and sharing your thoughts. It was very interesting, also for me. And maybe you will join us for another episode one day. I think we have a lot of topics to still talk about. But before we say goodbye, I have one final question. What do you think should people know before coming to China?
You will eat a lot of spicy food. Be prepared.
Okay, yes. But you can avoid it. At least I'm trying to do that. But yes, I think the food culture here in China is worth to explore it. And a lot of people love it. But if you have allergies or special dietary requirements, That makes it a little bit difficult, especially with the language barrier. But you will rock it. So thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to have you here. And I'm sure that this episode will help many people. And yeah, thank you and see you next time.
Yes, thank you so much, Sarah. It's nice talking to you. Have a nice day.
Once again, thanks for joining Chasing China. Subscribe to stay updated and stay tuned for more adventures. Until then, zai jian and happy chasing! I want to remind you that everything shared on this podcast is based on my own opinions, experiences, and perspectives. I don't want to judge or impose my views on anyone. Every journey is unique, and I appreciate you being a part of mine. Thanks again, and see you next time. Take care!